At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On this week's episode, I have Jordan Rickey with me, a teammate of mine from the Brisbane Broncos. Jordan is a young up-and-coming. He's played over 20 games now, but he's got a bit of experience in the NRL now. I want to talk to Jordan about the person behind the player and what he enjoys about playing in the NRL. So, Jordan, thanks for making time to be on the podcast today, mate. I'm glad to have you on.
No, thank you. I'm excited. I've been asking to come on for a while now. So, yeah, no, I'm excited.
It's good to finally sit down with you and have a chat. I heard briefly about one of the podcast chats that you had with your mate from school.
Yeah.
I thought you spoke pretty well on this. I was like, he'd be good to have on my show.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure you'll drop some knowledge that kids will appreciate.
Yeah, I'll try. Yeah.
So for those that don't know you too well, can you tell us a little bit about where you were born and what that was like?
Yeah, so obviously just a young Kiwi boy from New Zealand. You know, most of my family are from Raglan, and my grandparents, you know, all the way through my ancestors, they're all from Raglan area, and in New Zealand they call it the Waikato. So like it's sort of like the region of so you know how you have like Queensland and New South Wales, like in New Zealand it's all done by like sort of, you know, regional. So like, yeah, so all my family's from the Waikato there, so that's like Hamilton all the way like Huntley and Raglan as well. So yeah, all my family's from out there, and then we sort of moved our way down to Christchurch, the South Island, where it's a little bit colder and yeah, so pretty much did all my schooling and my childhood in Christchurch, and moved over here when I was 17, and yeah, just been in Brisbane since.
So growing up, had some siblings.
Yep.
Were you the type of sibling that competed hard, or were you a bit more easygoing? For me as a kid, I competed with my siblings a lot. Mm. Was it similar for you?
Yeah. So not a lot of people know this. So my biological father was Indigenous. He's Aboriginal. Mm-hmm. And my mum came over here when she was about 18, left New Zealand, came over here. And so my biological father was Indigenous. And, you know, I didn't really have much to do with him. Honestly, I think he was, you know, my mum went through a lot of struggles with him. Growing up, we're like, we didn't have not much, and we didn't have much at all. So it was pretty tough growing up, and you know, my mum sort of fled with me to, you know, her parents, my grandparents, and yeah, like I was pretty much raised with my grandparents because my mum had me at a young age. So my mum single raised me till I was about maybe 12 years old, and then she met my stepfather, and you know, he had kids with him. So I pretty much, you know, even though they're not my, you know, my blood related brothers and sisters, I don't really see it like that. You know, I see them as my brothers and sisters, and just almost like felt like normal, like to me. And obviously, like, I've always wanted to have like brothers and sisters because I was an only child, growing up. But like, I had a lot of cousins, and I was pretty much raised with my grandparents. So I was out there, and like every weekend, my cousins used to be there, and we used to just like do fun stuff. Like they were sort of like, they lived in the country, my grandparents, where that's where I grew up. So, you know, like out the back there was like sheep and sort of stuff. So we used to play like little silly games, like who could ride the sheep the longest, like just barefoot, no shirt, just shorts. Like that's how we grew up as kids. And there was a stream or like a little bit of a river that used to run through the, where we grew up in the town Sheffield. And, you know, we used to just go eeling and fishing, and we used to sit in these like, have you seen those tubes? They're sort of like tires, but they're tubes. They're like, and they float on water.
Yeah.
And we used to just sit in them and just ride it all the way down. Like, when we were kids, just all the way down. Used to go for ages and then grab the tube and walk all the way back up,
yeah,
all the way back down. It was just like good fun, and that's what we used to do. So, yeah, we used to make fun of that, just fun out of that with me and my cousins. And then, yeah, when my brother and sisters came along, it was we just pretty much did the same thing, and
yeah.
No, it was good. And yeah, it did get pretty competitive because the oldest boy, so my oldest brother, his name's Watermoon, he's pretty similar age as to me, so we always used to compete, and he's a basketballer, so
yeah.
We had a little hoop set up at our house, and man, we used to do some like full-on one-on-ones when we get back from school, and it used to be real competitive, but it was cool. So like the loser had to do dishes after dinner or something like
yeah.
that. So yeah.
Did you do a lot of dishes?
Yeah, I did. I actually did, because he was good too. He was actually really good.
So when you came over to Oz, you know, at the age of 17, away from the family, how have you been able to deal with that? Because I can't imagine it was, you know, an easy change for you.
Yeah.
Moving away from family.
Yeah. And no, it was really tough for me because we got a very big family, and very cultural driven. Like we're very, you know, we show a lot of culture in our family. Like my family talk Māori. We talk Māori to each other. We show the rules of Māori and how we were raised. That's just how it was. So when I first moved over, it was hard without my family, but also I got like a massive culture shock as well, because it was almost sort of like I was moving into like sort of, I don't know, Western sort of, like, you know, like it was, everything was just sort of unfamiliar to me, as in, like, so I was living in the Bronx house, for example, and all those boys are Australian, which is completely fine, but they would do things different that I'd be like, oh man, I've never seen anyone do that before, or like yep. stuff like that. Like something as like little as like sitting on a table. Like I used to be like, man, I can't believe you're sitting at the table. Like I'd get smacked over the head yeah. from my mum because that's what we eat.
Yeah,
we just sit on the floor. Like it was just little things like that. So yeah, it was really tough for me, obviously, because I'm a massive family person. And you know, like they're number one to me. So it was really hard, and I had all these like rules living at home, and when I moved over here, it was just me. And I think I found it really difficult, and I learned really fast that, you know, I could get in a bit of a trouble because I had no rules and no one was telling me what to do. So there was a couple of things where I did get in trouble a little bit and sort of lost my way. And Simon Scanlon, who works at Broncos, he you know, put me on the right track and gave me a couple slaps on the wrist and, you know, sort of told me that he knows that I'm better than that. And, yeah, so that was pretty difficult. And, yeah, I did struggle. And obviously being homesick, a few nights where I used to cry myself to sleep, missing my family and yeah. wanting to throw in the towel. But back home, there wasn't really much opportunity for me. And, you know, I wanted to chase the dream and play NRL. So, yeah, so it was a good place for me to be.
It's pretty interesting thing you said about like sitting at the table.
Mm.
I remember growing up in the village in PNG, only adults sit at the table.
Yeah.
And grandparents and then the next oldest.
Yeah.
It goes in order, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was always sat on the floor. But the odd occasion where you got to sit on the table, you kind of felt this, should I be up here?
Yeah,
or, you
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just reminded me of those moments back there.
Mm.
But in terms of you know, moving over here and having that, not having that leadership around you to guide you and help you, what was the biggest lesson for you that, you know, Simon taught you? Because did you tell him about the struggles you had?
Yeah, so I had struggles, and Simon was really good for me. He was you know, I generally do think I wouldn't be where I am today without him, because he was the one that offered me my first contract when I was 15. Playing at a local tournament in New Zealand, and obviously there's a few others like coaches and my mum and stuff like that. So, yeah, but I remember when I moved over here, I'd never ever like drunk alcohol in New Zealand, and like if I did, it wouldn't be much. Like I wouldn't really drink a lot, and like I was always I got my license like pretty young, because I was the oldest boy, and Mum and Dad had to run around the babies and my brothers and sisters to sports and stuff like that. So I was sort of the one that sort of had to look after myself, because I was the oldest. So yeah. Like I had to get myself up, make my own breakfast, you know, get my gear for rugby ready, and make my own way to the game and own way to trainings, and the odd occasion I'd get picked up from the game, or I could catch a ride with one of my mates. So my mum sort of said to me, like, you know, you're old enough now, at 16, you can get your license. So if you can get that as soon as possible, then, you know, you can just sort of look after yourself, which I was like really keen to do. I was like, yeah. So I did that pretty fast. So I was pretty like good in that way of getting myself ready for training and stuff like that when I moved over. But yeah, there was just times where when I moved over, you know, there was quite a lot of distractions over here, as in, you know, alcohol and women as such as well. You know, didn't really hang out with a lot of girls and around alcohol a lot growing up. But yeah, but when I came over here, it was almost like, you know, the boys were going out every weekend, and the boys I was living in the house with, and, you know, I'd go along with them, and sort of just spiraled out of control and got to the point where, like, I wouldn't go to work because, like, I'll be hungover, or I'll roll in at 6 a.m. on a Monday morning after a Sunday session.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I used to lie. Like, I was so scared to admit, like, where I've been. I used to just lie and, you know, I'd pull a sickie or something like that. Like, oh, no, I'm just feeling a bit sick. But really, I was just really hungover. And it just got really bad. And there was a couple of times where I wouldn't cut, like, I was late to training. It was just the little, you know how it's just the little things here. And Simon told me off once, didn't learn my lesson, you know. And then I went home for a moment, and I just got too comfortable at home. Like, I sort of felt like, oh, you know, I've already got a contract, you know, I sort of like made it, like a young, fresh 18-year-old, like, just all this cockiness started kicking in around my mates. And, you know, it just wasn't me. Like, it just, I look back at me now and I'm just like, man, like, me at 18 was like a dick. Like, I was a dick. Like, I actually was. And, you know, just arrogant and thought I was the man. And, and I was at home, and I was at home for about, this was during the off season. I was at home for about 5 weeks, and, man, I just drunk like nearly every single day. Like, it was bad. And I got up to about nearly 120 kilos, and I came back for preseason November, and I came back. And
had you played grade yet?
No, this I haven't played grade. Yeah, so yeah. I was in the EPD system when I was 18.
Yeah.
And I was meant to go, I was meant to come into the NRL squad, I think it was 2019, but because I came back so heavy, they kept me in EPD because my attitude was shit. Like, you know, they kept me there, and I was like, man, like, it nipped me in the butt. And, you know, that Simon was talking to me going, man, you know, the trainers and stuff like that, they're unhappy with you there. Simon was legit sat me down and was just like, man, like this could be it. Like, they're willing to just pass you on because, you know, they've sort of lost your way a little bit. So that nipped me really hard, and I was like, nah, can't let that happen. So, like, it was almost like a switch, like, stayed a couple of nights at Simon's house. He let me stay a couple of nights at his house, and I was just talking to him for 3 days, and, you know, I was just letting out all this emotion and all these things going on. And, you know, after that, those couple of days at his house, sort of put me back on the right path, and went back to the Broncos house and was there for a little bit, and then ended up finding my own place. Simon helped me find my own place in the club, and, yeah, just sort of started going on the way up, lost the weight, got fit, you know, still got an attitude check, and and then I was lucky enough to be invited into the NRL squad like halfway through the year 2019. And, you know, I was like, man, I'm so excited. And I remember, like, got in there and just got a bit of a reality check by some of the older boys, and you know, they were obviously excited to have me there. And, you know, I guess I was thinking, you know, some up and coming talent will be good. And there was a couple of boys that were a bit hard on me, but I thank them to this day for it, because I needed it. And but one of the very first people that took me under his wing was Alex Glenn, just because he knew I was a young Kiwi boy, and you know, similar childhood, same position. So it was just really cool to be under him and a few other boys as well that have moved on now to a different club. So
And, you know, thanks for sharing your the struggles you had coming through, because it's not an easy thing to do because a lot of us are embarrassed to talk about that type of thing, you know, drinking, especially in the early days, drinking, going out, getting home 5, 6 a.m. and then getting ready to go to training.
Yeah.
I was doing that my first couple of years, even before I played first grade, and then I started playing first grade. A little bit of income, you know, more money than what you're used to.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well, yeah.
All the young guys are excited to go out together, so.
Mm.
I'm lucky I had a reality check by John Cartwright.
Oh, yeah, Carty.
Carty's here now at the Bronx, assistant.
Yeah.
But, you know, he pulled me in the office and said, mate, I don't like what you're doing. You better cut that out or you're out of here.
Yeah.
I was doing, like, everything what you said there. Mm. I did the exact same thing. Because you're young, excited, you don't really know what to expect. You're fit, you know, healthy. And then you get a couple of the older guys, Cardi, they pull you in line. And
yeah.
I think that needs to be constant because, you know, your old habits are always going to kick in. And it takes time. But, yeah, thanks for sharing that, mate. It's, I think it's certainly going to help young guys coming through that. You know, if they hear this and they're thinking, oh, I can go out and get away with it. And you will. You'll get away with drinking.
Slowly but surely it's going to bite in the ass.
It will catch up to you. And I don't discourage any of that stuff because I did it. But there are consequences for your choices.
Yeah, definitely.
There's some advice I have for the young guys coming through. That'd be it. You are a competitive guy. Has that always been the case since you started playing footy, or did you start playing footy just for social?
I was very, very competitive. So like I was saying before, I was raised by my grandparents mostly my whole life. I didn't have a father figure for most of my childhood, so my granddad, who I call my koro, is was pretty much my father. And he played rugby and rugby league when he was growing up, and you know, he was good to me. Like he taught me about discipline and, you know, be hard, be tough. You know, he's one of the hardest workers I know. So he taught me all, you know, how to be hard, be tough, and you know, carry on and just be strong. And you know, like he's a very honest critic as well. He used to come to every single one of my games, like from when I was the age of 5 all the way up to high school until I moved over. Like, he used to come to every single one. And when I was younger, he used to be like, yeah, I'll give you you know, 50 cents a try, 50 cents a try. And automatically in my head, I was like, right, there's a challenge. Like, he's challenging me to see what I can do. And it was funny because, like, he started off with like $2 a try. And I used to get like 3 or 4 tries when I was 5 years old. And then I was ended up costing him a bit of money. So he dropped it down to 50 cents. So it used to crack me up. But I started off playing Ripper rugby when I was 4 years old. And I was a big kid. Like, I was, you know, I developed very early. I was tall and quite chubby. And I used to come onto the ball hard, like very hard. And once you get ripped, you're supposed to stop straight away and play the ball. But it took me a while to slow down. So I used to like bowl over poor kids, and parents were getting angry, and they didn't believe I was 4 years old. And my mum got to the point where my mum had to actually take my birth certificate down and show the other parents, like, he is actually 4. Like, he's 4 years old. And they were just like, nah, no way. And so I went through, you know, a bit of criticism like that as well. Like, I remember when I'll never forget this game. Even though I was 4, I'll never forget it. So I remember I was like playing, and this parent and the other team was screaming at me. You know, I was a young kid, screaming and swearing at me, like, in racial slurs also as well. So I remember I ran off and I was crying, and I was like, I never want to play again. Like, I don't want to play. Like, my mum was very upset. And after that, my granddad was like, right, we'll put you in rugby league, because my granddad did both. So I remember playing my first game of rugby league when I was about 5 years old for this club called Ricketon Knights. And I played my first game and I just absolutely loved it. Like, boys were the same size as me. It was just awesome. You get more ball, you can tackle and run. And I used to love it. And my mum's always told me that I was a very energetic kid. Like, she said sometimes I used to stand there and hit a tree with a stick for like 3 hours. Just weird stuff like that. And I used to love climbing trees and jumping off the roofs. Like, that was just me. I used to love stuff like that. So I was always outside just running around and trying to compete with myself. And like, if I could run around the house like in this sort of time, I'm getting used to get my mum to try time how fast I could run around the house. So just little stuff like that. I used to compete with myself, and my granddad used to, like during the school holidays and stuff like that, he used to set me like challenges I could do during the day, like how fast I could mow the lawn. But really, I was actually doing chores. But in my head, I was like, yeah, I'm going to try Pete.
That's a good trick. I like that one.
Use
it for Paxton.
Yeah. So like how fast I could mow the lawn and stuff like that. Like I used to do little stuff like that. But then as I got older, I was like, man, he's just trying to give me chores. But it was all good. So I did chores and all that stuff at a very young age as well. And I used to compete like that way too. Like if I could, who could clean the car cleanest like out of me and my cousins and stuff like that, just little stuff like that. So I was very competitive. And but like going back to the games, he was very honest with me as well. Like, even if I did score one or two tries in a game, he'd be like, oh yeah, but you missed those two tackles. Like he would just be real straight up with me like that. And I was like, man, like it used to hit me every time. And I used to be like, damn, okay, all right. I'll go away and I'll work on it. And I used to just work on it. But as I used to play footy for fun, like as with my mates. And then as I was getting older, I was like, man, I want to turn this into a career. So I took it more seriously. And I used to start going for runs and, going to the park by myself and, pretending to step players and stuff like that. Just little things like that. So it was real cool. Yeah.
What do you think has been the toughest lesson you've learned playing at the NRL level?
I think I think there's two for me is criticism's one and consistency. So I've got no shame to admit, like I'm a sensitive guy sometimes. Like I can admit that, especially when I'm tired, I've had a big day, like I can be pretty sensitive. So especially after a game, like, you put your heart and soul into a game or heart and soul into training all week. And, something happens during training, you miss an important tackle or you miss an important time, for example, or in a game, same thing, you run the wrong line and it's a game-winning line. You could have won the game or you could have put your team up on the board. And you used to just, obviously everyone makes mistakes, but sometimes people that watch the game don't think that, they think that you almost do it on purpose. So they feel like they can give you a spray on social media and sometimes directly private message you also as well. So that was really hard for me to handle coming into the NRL. But also the hype as well. The hype, people used to hype you up, if you've had a good game and then you have an average game next week and he's like, oh, he's nothing. That used to really hurt me, and I'm definitely working on it now. And I've got good people such as yourself to help me with that. And I've had a good couple of chats with you, and you've definitely helped me out with my head noise. consistency as well. Also, that's another thing as well for me. Yeah. Learning just to day in, day out, just grind. You just got to grind it out. Even though if you're sore, you're tired, or something's going on at home, you just got to drop it at the front, front door as soon as you walk into training or onto the field. It's just game time. You just got to go ready to go. And I'm also dealing with that as well. Like it's all, it's a lot of mental way. You sort of just got to almost talk to yourself. You're going to have dark times in the game where, you just don't feel like playing, but really, you just got to turn up for your teammates. And I think that's what drives me the most, is when I see the boys working around me as hard as I am, that really like gets me going and I want to work for them. And, if I mess up or make a mistake, it really hurts me because, I love the boys around me and, I want to do the fans proud and do my family proud. So those are the two things I'm learning with. I've gotten a lot better, but I'm still dealing with those. And I've got the right people around me to talk to, and so I'm slowly getting better at it. So
On the contrary, what's the most enjoyable thing about playing in the NRL?
I've thought about this a couple of times. I think the really coolest thing is to represent my family name, like the Ricky name, like the Ricky last name, and I think that's really cool. And my family can see me running out on the TV back home, and my grandparents, they're just so proud of me and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool. And also I think it's one thing to be, like well known, but I think it's really cool when, you know, you walk around the street or when you're doing promo and you see, you know, kids or fans, like you really do light up their day. Like you shake their hand, you give them the time of day, you have a chat with them. And like I've always been told growing up, you know, like just it doesn't take a lot to be a nice person. So I always just try and make sure that, you know, even if it's 2 minutes, just, you know, how are you? Yeah, awesome to meet you, bro. Like where you from? Just have a little chat with them and, you know, you make sure you want them to go away and go, man, he's actually a good dude. So
yeah,
I think that's really cool, like putting a smile on people's faces and when you say hello. And I think that's cool. And representing my family name, that's a really cool thing as well. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I agree. There's two things you mentioned. Putting a smile on people's face and representing your family's name. Probably doesn't really get much better than that.
Yeah.
I think probably – other thing is scoring a try.
That's
probably the best feeling in the game. You know?
And you're like, I'm like guaranteed for like both of us growing up, like our dream was to play NRL. So like we're living our dream. Like that's awesome too. Like
It's certainly a great experience.
Mm.
I know we all have our down days, but when you're at your absolute best, what have you done right?
I'm really big on preparation. Hey, so like. I know I've talked to you about this, like eating and, you know, like what it takes to feel your body. And I learned very quickly that the stuff I was putting in my mouth and that what goes into me would make me not perform the best I know I can perform out on the field. So I know if you put good nutrients and, you know, good meats, veggies and stuff like that into your body, like your mind's switched on, your body's ready to go, you recover faster. So I was very big on that, and I love talking to people about like eating and dietary requirements and stuff like that, and I love it, eh? And I get real into it. Like I watch like YouTube videos sometimes about it, like or other athletes eat, and it's just insane. Like it's real cool. But for me, like so like my preparation is like really massive. So I ring my family as much as I can, like always talk to them as much as I can, you know. And sometimes it's good to just talk to them about. Not even footy, just like catch up on like, oh, what happened this week with my brother and sister? Like, oh, how did school go? You know, what did you do at school this week? Like, I just love stuff like that. So it's just good to get away from footy in that way, like family time. And you would know that with your kids and stuff like that. And it's just real cool to just get away from footy like that. And but leading up to the game or training, just food and just try to stay relaxed as possible and. You know, get as much sleep as I can. And, I think for me, the biggest thing would be food.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Just what I'm eating and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me personally, if preparation is a big thing, obviously, food, there's not really much I haven't really spoken much about this, but like visualizing, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
how training is going to, that's had a huge, it's hard to measure it, you know, but you can measure it from how you've played that week.
Yeah.
Or how you've trained that week. It is something I'm trying to bring to the front of my mind about how important a role it plays. But, you know, there's obviously athletes from around the world at the top of their game talk about visualizing mindset.
Yeah.
That's certainly helped me over my career. I feel like if I had done more, would I be a better player? You know, I was speaking to Benny Eichen earlier. He's on the podcast. So, and he said, anyone on their day will be the best rugby league player in the world at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And that goes for everyone who plays. It's just the difference is the consistency of that.
Mm.
And I find the whole visualizing and meditating, it's not really explored too much. So I'm trying to get into that area. Yeah. Do you do much meditating?
No, not really, because I'm a massive overthinker. Like I overthink things so much. So I find the less – some people are different, eh? Like I find for me, the less I think about the game throughout the week, I feel like the better I play. But then as I'm coming up to, you know, like 2 days before the game or even the day before a game, I start going, like getting focused and getting into it. But I'm not saying I wasn't focused, but, you know, I've started going, all right, we're time to go in a couple of days. Like, let's go. Like, because I feel like if I just think about it too much throughout the week, I'll just do my head in and like I'll start overthinking things and I just don't need there. So I've just really thought about, you know, just getting in there and you know, on the field, like, I actually, like, Ben, like, I've talked to Ben Eichen about this as well. Like, he was telling me, like, you know, you catch and pass, you tackle pretty much your whole life. And at the end of the day, that's all it is, really, isn't it? Like,
that's true.
That is true. Like, yeah. We've been doing that our whole life since we've been playing it as kids. And he's just like, just get out there and just enjoy it and have fun and run as hard as you can, hit as hard as you can, and, you know, actually just have some fun. And I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, like, even if this is one of the, or if not the hardest competition in the world, get out there and have as much fun as I can. So I do try to think about that.
Having fun's a very important part of it. Otherwise, what's the point in doing it? You know,
why are you doing it? Yeah.
I want to talk just a little bit about your experience with the Māori All Stars.
Yep.
You played 2 games.
Yeah.
You know, what was it like going to camp with those guys there?
Yeah, it was insane, eh? So, I was coming off my first NRL preseason. And I was getting ready for a trial game. And I remember I come home after training. This was the week leading up to the trial game. So the Māori All-Stars game, this is 2020 in Seabus Stadium. So the Māori All-Stars game was playing on the Saturday and the Bronx boys were playing on a Friday night in Cairns, I think it was, against Townsville, against Cowboys. And I got back home and I was like just about to have a nap. And my phone started going off. I looked at it and it was a private number. I was like, man, where is it? He's ringing me. I was like, oh, I never answer like private numbers or anything like that. And then I always listen to the voice message and I'll be like, oh, that's that person. I'll ring them back. So I ended up just picking it up. I was like, oh, whatever. So I was lying on my bed, just relaxed. And I go, oh, hello, Jordan speaking. He goes, oh, hey, Jordan, it's David Kidwell. And I just went like this. And I just sat up straight away and I was like, oh, hi, David, how you going? And he's like, yeah, good, mate. And he's like, look, I just wanted to give you a call. You know, there's 2 boys that pulled out of the All-Stars that can't play just because of injury and they don't want to make it worse. I just want to see if you'll come down and play for the Māori All-Stars. And I was like, in my head, I was shocked. Like, I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, I haven't even played NRL yet. Like, I haven't even played NRL. Like, not even an All-Star. Like, how am I going to? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, no, I'm being serious. Like, I need you to come down and be in the camp and just get around the boys. And he's like, mate, like, just enjoy it. Get a feel. You might like, and he did say to me, he's like, there might be a chance that you might not play. Like, but, you know, like, just come down and just enjoy it and be the experience. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, let's go. And he's like, cool, can you get here this afternoon? And I was like, yep. So I rang Anthony Seibold at the time. I rang Seibs and I was like, hey, mate, I've had a pretty good opportunity. Told him straight away. And then Anthony's like, oh, are you serious? Like, that's awesome, mate. You should definitely go. And I was like, oh, yes. Like, I'm about to walk into a camp full of All-Stars. Like, this is insane. So anyway, Steve says, yeah, mate, go join the opportunity, learn as much as you can. Because, you know, like, there was Jesse Bromwich, Kenny Bromwich, Adam Blair, all those boys were in the team. And I was like, man, I'm going to learn so much of them. So I remember I walked in and I drove down from Brisbane to Goldie. That's where our camp was. And I walked in and, you know, everyone was there. Like, the staff was there, introduced me and walked me upstairs. And all the boys were already in the team room. And I was just like, introducing myself to like Brendan Smith, Kevin Ponga, and I was just like, far out. I'm in the same room as these guys. Like, it was just insane because they all, you know, I watched them growing up. Like, these are all like Kiwi All-Stars. Like, it's just, it's insane. And yeah, and it was just one of the best weeks I've ever had. I learned so much off those guys. And I got told on the Thursday night that David Kidwell was going to play me on the sad day, and I was like, oh my god, my heart was beating really fast. And I remember, like, the boys were so good to me, they took me under their wing, they were just really nice to me, took me for coffees every morning, just talking to me. And I was just like a sponge, just trying to soak up as much as I can. And yeah, I just absolutely loved it. And I remember running out at Seabus. It was like 7 o'clock kickoff, and it was just packed. Like, one side was all Indigenous and the other side was all Māori, and it was just absolutely packed. And I was like, oh my god. Like, it was like one of those where I was like, man, I can't believe I'm here. Like, I'm playing against these guys, and it was just insane. And we did the haka and I was all fired up, G'd up. And then we were lining up in the line and we're waiting for the Indigenous War Dance and, you know, like Latrell Mitchell, Blake Ferguson, all those guys. And I'm just like, far out. I'm about to play these guys. I can't believe it. And, yeah, it was just like, it was honestly just, I'd never, ever forget it. I ran out there and got, tried to get a carry as fast as I can. And, yeah, and then once I got a carry, I just played my game and, yeah, loved it. And then the second game, I was, you know, excited enough to be invited back, and that was in Townsville. And absolutely love those camps, eh? Like, you would know when you play for the Kumuls, like,
yeah,
those camps are always the best, eh?
There's something different about them.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I can never put words to it.
Mm.
Well, it's one of the best feelings going to those camps.
Yeah.
Do you remember noticing anything about the way someone prepares themselves and anyone in particular? Or maybe you don't have to throw names out there, but if the way they prepared themselves.
It's so funny, eh? Because I remember for my first All-Stars game, I was like, you could imagine me, I was a nervous wreck. Like, I was like in the changing rooms looking around. Like, I was like, man, what's going on? Like, this is so many people watching this. Like, you could hear the crowd. Like, it was just like, I was like, man, I was so scared, like, so nervous. And I was just looking around me, eh? And I remember, like, I was on the foam roller, like, rolling out. And I just remember looking at, like KP, like Kalen Ponga. He's awesome dude, bro. Like, so cool. And he was just dancing. Like, he had his headphones in, had the shorts on, and he was just in the corner just vibing, enjoying it. And I'm just like, bro, I'm sitting here, like, scared, and this guy's in the corner over there, like, dancing, just enjoying it. And, like, he went out there and just absolutely killed it, like, that game. And I was just like, man, like.
I've got to dance too.
Yeah. I was like, how's he doing that? Like, I was just like. And then, like, you look at other players and some of them are, like, some of the boys might be religious. So, you know, they might do a quick prayer. And, you know, some of them, like to have a bit of a joke around and a bit of a laugh. And, you know, and then as soon as it comes to game time, it's like a switch, they're on. And some people, like, soon as they, you know, get on the floor, as you'd know, you'd see heaps of people prepare. They're just very switched on, don't talk much, you know, have their headphones in and just, like, they're just ready to go. So, yeah, for me it was I learned a big lesson in trying to find my own sort of way of getting ready for a game. And I felt like I've found a pretty good routine and, yeah, I like sticking to it. But, yeah, I just remember looking around, like, thinking everyone would be, like, we were like, let's go. But, like, some people are just different, eh? So.
Yeah. I think once you work that out, then you stick with that. And
yeah.
I've mentioned Benny again. He said kind of just when a light bulb went off in my head.
Mm.
He said I tried to be as relaxed as I could be before a game, and that came in all different forms.
Yeah.
Some guys, like, dancing, having a joke around, whatever. But me personally, it's about feeling relaxed as well.
Yeah.
I'm not really a big talker. I like to have a joke around sometimes. But yeah. 10, 15 minutes from warm-up, then that's
go time.
Go time for me. So, Jordy, as we get towards the back end of the podcast, I've just got a few fun rapid-fire questions.
Yep.
Answer them as short as you want or as long as you want. What's your game day ritual? Have you got one?
Yeah, so I like waking up. I wake up and I have a massive breakfast, like big breakfast. So, like, 5 eggs, bit of bacon, bit of salmon, you know, and then I like to have a couple pieces of sourdough, and then I'll get that, and then on the side I'll have 2 pieces of sourdough with avocado, a bit of tomato, a bit of lemon, and a coffee. So, like, I like to have that. And then if I'm at a cafe, like, you know, near a beach or something like that, I like to go for a little walk, and that's when I'll ring my family back home and just have a chat and have a FaceTime while I'm having a walk. So I'll do that and just come home, relax, and then I'll just have a nap, you know, so I'm feeling, like, you know, nice and relaxed, and have a little nap, and then I'll wake up and, yeah, just maybe have, like, a light snack then, and then I just on the way to the game. But, yeah, nothing too major during the day, but, like, I normally just stick to that, and that's how I like doing it, so, yeah.
What's the last song you listen to before you take the headphones off? Is there one particular song?
Yeah, there's a few. There's one. I love listening to. Do you know the song Remember the Name? I think it's called Remember the Name. It's like 10% luck, Yeah, I do actually. Love listening to that. I don't know why, but it just gets me going.
Just motivating.
Yeah. And there's this one song too. I listening to it when I was like 12 years old, 13 years old. Have you heard of Queen, I Want It All, that song?
Yeah,
it's got a real cool guitar solo in it.
Yeah.
I used to love it. It used to get me like fired up. I don't know why, but it still does now. I'm just like, man, it's a sick song.
I think someone else, maybe Justin Olam mentioned that. I had no idea who.
Yeah, Queen. But it's called Queen, I Want It All. It's a good song too. And there's a couple of times actually where I've like watched a haka before a match.
Yeah.
Like I've actually physically like watched a haka, or like I'll play it and I'll just listen to it in my headphones and I'll just be like, yeah.
Fired up.
Yeah.
I know your roommate, Jesse Arthurs. What's it like living with him?
Nah, he's he's cool, bro. Me and Jesse, we're like best mates, and he's cool. Like he's just a crack up, bro. Yeah. He cracks me up because like sometimes he just doesn't think about, like he just like just does like weird stuff, and he's just like, well, what are you doing? And he just goes, oh shit, I actually don't know. Like he's just like, sometimes he just goes like off of the fairies, eh? It's funny. Yeah.
I'm sure you'll have similar things to say. What's your favorite hobby? I know a few of the boys surf or they've taken up surfing.
I tried golf and I just got so angry and frustrated with myself, so I was like, nah, I'm not doing this. Like golf used to just drive me insane because like I think it'd be like I'd have perfect like me thinking like you're trying to smack it as hard as you can, but you're not at all. Like you're just trying to like give it a little tap, and it actually goes further than you think. So
we all have that battle.
Yeah. So I hate golf. So they say it's a peaceful game, but it drives me insane. Some of the boys love it.
It's definitely not peaceful. Oh, actually, it's peaceful. If you one out of 10 shots.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And but like I love I ended up buying a surfboard for my shoulder surgery. And I love that, eh? I love surfing. Like I tried to.
You can stand up.
I'm getting better. I'm actually getting. At the start, I was terrible. Like I was so terrible. I thought I was too like heavy, too tall. I was Gumby. But then, like you know, once you start like picking it up and getting like the feel of things, I love doing that. But honestly, I just love being around my mates. Like I love just like doing stuff like this, bro. Like just having a coffee, having a chat. Like I just love having a chat and being around my mates. That's probably like one of my favorite hobbies, is just being around my friends and enjoying it. Yeah.
If you were an animal, if there's an animal that represents you, what is it? Oh, what would it be?
Oh, I'd like to be like, imagine, oh, I don't know. Heath Boys, I don't know. Cause like.
A penguin.
Yeah. You could be like real, like, yeah, I'm a Leo. Like I'm a lion. Like something like, I don't know. I feel like I'd be like, you need like an animal that's like, quite, you know, like a bit of like quite cool, but then also like a bit cheeky as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. What?
I asked myself, I'm still trying to work mine out.
Yeah.
I've always thought like a lion as well, just, you know, playing NRL.
Yeah.
You're alpha male. Far from it, you know? So but I just said dog because.
A dog.
Dog's loyal. Pretty calm, happy in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
Look after the family, good around the family. I mean, but if your tail gets stood on, I'm not scared to bite back.
So,
I like that definition. Actually, I think I'm working it out.
I don't know. What
type of dog? I'm still yet to work it out.
Chihuahua. No, I don't know. What would mine be? I actually don't.
Maybe you can think
penguins
about
aren't that scarce though, eh? They aren't fierce though. Yeah, aren't they?
I don't know anything about penguins. It just sounded funny for me to say it.
Maybe like a sea lion. But they're quite lazy, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't think.
Well, maybe the next podcast,
you'll
have a better definition.
I'll have a better.
And
I'll go do some homework.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll come back to you.
Are there any charities or good causes that you support or that you'd like to mention that listeners might be able to help out with?
Not really at the moment, but like for me, like I just think any like helping just goes a long way. So just anything, eh? Like if you can help out someone, whether it's a charity or, you know, your friends going through a hard time or your family members going through a hard time, just like, man, just reach out. Like, it's not, I'm very big on mental health, like very, very big. So one of my absolutely best mates who I call, who's my cousin, but he was, you know, he's my, one of my best mates growing up as a kid. I was actually here. So I was 18 and, sadly he took his own life just through mental battles and stuff like that. So after that, it just really like kicked in the man, like, you just got to talk, like, mental health. And it really upset. Like, I was rattled, eh, for a very long time. And, still to this day, I get pretty upset about it. You know, I always think about him, how we used to grow up, how I was saying before, how when we used to grow up and pretend like ride sheep and, you know, go in the tubing down the, like the river. So we did all that sort of stuff together, go fishing. So it was really, you know, hard for me to take, but definitely if, you know, just reach out and talk to someone. And, you know, just mental health for me, just very big. And, you know, just reach out and talk, and don't be afraid. You know, you're more brave of talking about it than keeping it to yourself. I feel like you're more brave of a person to talk about it. So, yeah. So, yeah, I'm just very big on that. So if just anyone out, everyone that's out there listening to this, you know, if you know that someone's going through a bit of a rough time, or you sense that someone's going through a rough time, you know, just send them a text or a call, or pop around and just be like, hey, you okay? And you want to have a chat or go have a coffee or something like that. So, yeah.
That's an awesome message, Jordy. 100% agree and support what you're saying there. So I just want to thank you for your time today. Yeah. I know it's a day off for you, but I appreciate you driving up to Brisbane to have this chat with me on the podcast. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people are going to gain a lot from this. So thanks, Jordy.
Appreciate
it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.